Hello, everyone. I hope you all had a great weekend this past weekend. I hope some of you got to see some northern lights. I wasn't as fortunate this time around, but we'll see here in the coming future. Tonight we're going to be talking about the Great Way and the Law of One, more specifically all of them. So the Great Way of the Mind, the Great Way of the Body, and the Great Way of the Spirit. But first, let me do a quick introduction. I'm Trish. I've been studying the Law of One since around 2017. I'm a tarot reader and a psychic medium. I had a near-death experience back in 2021 that further intensified those experiences. I'm a seeker, just like everyone else, and I do this as a way of offering my own current understanding. It's also important to note that this does come through my own distortions, so please take what resonates and leave the rest. The site I'm working off of tonight is thelawofone.info. You can see that up here. And it does offer the complete channeling sessions in order that were done in the early 1980s through Carlo Rucker, Jim McCurdy as the scribe, and Don Elkins as the questioner. Law of One, in my own opinion, was brought through as a way of assisting humankind to seek further truths of creation and to help us in finding those truths within ourselves. So, as I said, we're doing all three great ways. And I want to connect the three. And this is, again, it comes through my own understanding. So if it does not resonate, as I said, take it. Resonates and leave the rest. Law of One, they say that the significator is complex, and what a complex means in terms of a Law of One is the three act together. It doesn't say anything about the great ways being complex. However, I think it's impossible at some point in your study not to connect to them. So that's what I'm hopefully going to do for you guys today. So you can see how all three of them really do kind of need to work together. And I mean, the mind, body, and the spirit for us to understand how creation comes through or how you connect to creator. And then ultimately making your choice to be of service to others or to only serve oneself. So let's get going. And there's a lot to talk about with the Great Way of the Mind. That is the chariot in archetype study. So let's get into session 79.41. Don asks, would the conqueror or chariot then represent the culmination of the action of the first six archetypes into conquering the mental processes, even possibly removing the veil? So the first six archetypes are listed here. So we have the matrix, potentiator, catalyst, experience, significator, transformation, and then the great way. And then we move on into the body. So, and Ra answers, this is most perceptive. The archetype seven is the one difficult to enunciate. We may call it the path, the way, or the great way of the mind. Its foundation is a reflection and substantial summary of archetypes one through six. And when I think of that phrase there, the substantial summary, I think of how they speak about the violet ray being a sum of all the others. So that's the chakra, that's the sum of all the others. You take frequency from the root, the frequency from the sacral, the solar, the heart, the throat, the voice into the indigo ray. And then you add those frequencies together, and that's how you get your sum, the violet ray. One may also see the way of the mind as showing the kingdom or fruits of appropriate travel through the mind, and that the mind continues to move as majestically through the material it conceives of as a chariot drawn by royal lions or steeds. So this is a mind moving, right? And then for Carla, they were suggesting some things for her pain. So Interesting. And I want to get into, we get into it a lot further, but they talk about it being in relative to time space in a sense. So let's go forward before I get ahead of myself. So I want to see what Ra says about it. So moving on to 92.17.s, as each energy center becomes activated and balanced, the transformation of the mind is called upon more and more frequently. And let's look at, hold on, let's look at what the transformation of the mind is in order to better understand. It's the levers. So, and when I experience this, just from my own experience, it's like you're seeing everybody's light and dark at the same time, as well as your own, and you're having to kind of discern who's who and what's what, but you're seeing it all happening in current time. Okay, so the transformation of the mind is called upon more and more frequently. When all of the energy centers are activated and balanced to a minimal degree, contact with intelligent infinity occurs. The veil is removed and the great way of the mind is called upon. Is this correct? And Ross says, no, it's not quite an elegant look at some of the relationships within the archetypical mind. However, it must be seen once again that the archetypical mind does not equal the acting incarnational mind-body spirit complex's progression or evolution. Okay. Due to the first misperception, we hesitate to speak to the second consideration, but shall attempt to clarify. While studying the archetypical mind, we may suggest that the student look at the great way of the mind, not as that which is attained after contact with intelligent infinity, but rather as that portion of the archetypal mind which denotes and configures the particular framework within the mind, body, or spirit archetypes move. So this, the archetypical mind is the framework. Well, the great way is more or less the framework. So our ultimate goal, I would think, would be the great way, but we have to pass through all the other archetypes, first and get through those and understand that that's a path that we have to take. As far as going through I mean, it goes all the way back to, so that's your foundation, right? And that's something that makes you move, and then you have a catalyst which makes you move even more, and then there's a desire for change, right? And then this is the experience you're reflecting on the recent catalyst and how looking at how the things you could improve on, or then looking outward and seeing what others might need to improve on. And then this is the ultimate, we've reviewed all that, and we've seen what we bring. We've seen how far we've come. We have an ultimate view of where we're grateful for the catalyst and what we brought and the things that we do need to work on. And we're thankful for the catalyst because it just shows us things that we need to work on, as well as, in the outer environment with other selves as well. So, and then we kind of have to have this view of ourselves to make any kind of transformation, right? And then we have the great way, which is, our ability to kind of pull that through with what we know of what we learned. Okay. So this is moving on to 100.7. We will probably return to this card next session and move more of an observation after we study Ra's comments to conserve and efficiently use time. I will make notes with respect to card 7, okay, which is again the Chariot. First, the veil between the conscious and the unconscious mind has been removed. The veil is the curtain, I would assume, and at the top is lifted. Even though the veil has been removed, perception of intelligent infinity is still distorted according to the seeker's beliefs and means of seeking. Would you comment on that? And I'm not going to comment on this question because Ra answers it in such a great way. As one observes the veil of the image of the great way of the mind, it may be helpful to ideate using the framework of environment. The great way, the mind, body, or spirit is intended to limn the milieu within each framework of the mind, body, or spirit shall be placed. So maybe it's been a while since I've been in school, but I had to look up the definition of what in the world that meant. And maybe it's just because it's not in my common vocabulary to say limn the milieu. So what it means is mimic the belief within which the work of mind, body, spirit shall be placed. So yeah, I mean, he answers it. It is our view of intelligent infinity or the cosmos or the universe absolutely mimics our belief system. And I've had my own near-death experience, and I've listened to others' experience from it as well. And everybody kind of sees their own belief system. So, and some not. Mine kind of threw me off guard a little bit, but I had already been studying the Law of One for a few years before I ended up with my own experience with that. So, but thusly, the veil is shown, both somewhat lifted and still present, since the work of the mind and its transformation involves progressive lifting of the great veil betwixt conscious mind and deep mind. The complete success of this attempt is not properly a portion of third density work, and more especially third density mental processes. Okay, so basically our belief systems are the network that we've created with this belief system, or the milieu that we have created with this belief system, really isn't lifted until we are not incarnate anymore, is the way that I'm understanding. You're more than welcome to correct me if you think that that needs work. So let's look at the card really quick, though. Well, no, let's go through this one and then we'll look at the card. Moving on to the next question in the same session, 100.8. The fact the veil is raised higher on the right-hand side than on the left indicates to me that the adept is choosing the positive polarity will have a greater success in penetrating the veil. Would Ra comment? Ra answers, yeah, this is a true statement if it is realized that the questioner speaks of potential success. Indeed, your third density experience is distorted or skewed so that the positive orientation has more aid than the so-called negative. So let's look at the card really quick. This is, here we go. So this is the Chariot. So this is where we're talking. This is what he's talking about. The veil, is pulled up higher on the right side than it is the left. Right. So this is where they're saying, well, yeah, it's kind of made that way so that, the positive gets more assistance if we choose that route. I also wanted to point out my own in this card here, and they may explain it at some point, and it's probably going to come up in this discussion too. But the sphere here is in the right hand, and it's a white light, emanating white light, indicating that maybe, and I know she's pointed to the left, and I'm thinking she's a positive or he's a positive creature. And he's getting assistance. He's listening for the positive response because he wants to be positive. He's in order to be helping something over here, in order to be assisting something over here. Right. And we have this sword here, which to me, that's protection. To be honest, that's my own interpretation. And then we have anything that's colored in white is going to be your positive. And then such as much as we have the two sphinxes here, which we'll get into later, but I believe that's proximity to time space. We have a positive and then a negative, but it's like there's a balance here, right? Because we have a positive side here. But yet, there's a negative down here. So there's a balance involved in all of this. So, okay. Let's go back. We'll go back to the card at some point. Just wanted to point out my own interpretations on some of that. Okay. All right, so we're at 100.9. It would also seem to me that since Ross stated in the last session that the limit of the viewpoint is the source of all distortions, that the very nature of the service to self distortions that create the left-hand path are a function of the veil, and therefore are dependent, to some degree, on at least a partial continued veiling. Does that make any sense? Ra answers, there is a thread of logic in what you suppose. Well, okay, maybe. The polarities are both dependent upon limited viewpoint. However, the negative polarity depends more heavily upon the illusory separation betwixt the self and all other mind-body-spirit complexes. So that's self and other people. You have this illusion that you are separate from others, or you have to stay separate. The positive polarity attempts to see through the illusion to the creator in each person, in each mind-body-spirit complex. But for the greater part, is concerned with the behaviors and thoughts directed towards other selves in order to be of service. This attitude in itself is full of stuff of your third density illusion. Yeah, absolutely it is. So the positive side works more closely with the idea of seeing the creator in all. The negative would like to keep that separation. However, going back to the positive, it seems to be more concerned with thoughts and behaviors directed towards others in order to be of service. Right. Okay. Well, that makes me feel better. So. But it also kind of gives us a reminder, hey, this is third density stuff. This is just things that we have to get through at this point in time as we go through this cycle. And it is just normal third density stuff. So, okay. All right. The crown of three stars indicates a mastery of balancing of the mind, body, and spirit. Is that any way correct? This device is astrological in origin, and the interpretation given somewhat confusion. We deal in this image with the environment of mind. It is perhaps appropriate to release the starry crown from its stricture. So I think that was the old. This is part of it, the redrawn. So I think look at my deck and see if there is three stars in my. There is not. Okay. I think that was a culture thing. They do mention, you know, the ones that have originated in Egypt several millennia ago were more culture-based than anything. So, and we see that nowadays, too. I mean, there's how many versions of Tarot out there that are all drawn differently. It's all everybody's distortions of their own culture and their own belief system. So not that any of them are wrong. It's just how they were brought through. Okay, the entities, the small russet or black and white entities, have now been changed so that they appear to be sphinxes, which we are assuming mean that the catalyst has been mastered. I am also assuming that they act as the power that moves the chariot depicted here, so that this mastery enables the mind and its transformation to become more mobile, unlike it was prior to this mastery locked within the illusion. Can Ra comment on that? Ra answers, firstly, we ask the student consider the Great Way not as a culmination of series of seven activities or functions, but as a far more clearly delineated image of the environment within the mind, body, or spirit, so shall function. Therefore, the culturally determined creatures called sphinxes do not indicate mastery over catalyst. The second supposition, that of placing The creatures as the movers of a chariot of mind has far more virtue. You may connote that the concept of time to the image of the Sphinx, the mental and mental emotional complex ripens and moves and is transformed in time. Right. So that's where I was talking about earlier, where the Sphinxes kind of represent time. So we can have a positive time space and a negative time space. And there appears to be a balancing act going on with these as well, within the positive and negative, like a yin yang. See over here, she's listening here for the positive insight or a positive higher self, if you will. Listening for that intuition, but she's facing this way, so she might be, in a sense, speaking this way, directing that way, but she's listening this way. And there's still positive down here, as well as a negative over here. The right side, being the law of one, always represents the right-hand path, which is service to others. Okay. All right. So, can we make the conclusion that this represents our ability to our mind travel in time space? I would say yes. And as far as pointers on training your mind, in a sense, to, because I think it all happens in the present moment. And by it all happens, I mean everything is in the present moment. And we'll connect that with the other two of the body and the spirit later on. But listening for the present moment, listening, training your mind to focus on the present moment is a rather tough thing to do, and it takes a lot of practice. But I think that, watching the second hand of the clock and trying to predict when it's going to move next, or listening for a metronome and predicting when it will hit next, is one great way of training your mind to listen for that present moment. Because that's where it's all, that's where the creator lies, that's where everything that you're looking for, the answers, the intuition, that's where it's at. So. Okay, so let's go on to 103.10. In that case, I have a few questions on card 7 in order to finish off our first run through of the archetypes of the mind. There is a T with two right angles above it on the chest of the entity in card 7. Then we have a lower T, and we guess that it has something to do with the possibility of choosing either path in the transformation, and the upper two angles representing the great way of the left or right-hand path and a mental transformation that makes the change from space-time into time-space, you might say. Is there anything in there that's actually correct in this guess? And Ra says, yeah, okay. And that's all they asked. They didn't ask for a clarification. So the next question is, would you comment on that? But first, I want to go back to the card. And because I think they're talking about the original cards, and they didn't bring those up. But there is a T here, and then there's a lower T. But again, I've already gone over the right hand and the left hand path. So, I'm probably flipping back and forth too quick. I apologize. Okay, so let's go on to the clarification of this. The use of the Tao and the architect square is indeed intended to suggest the proximity of the space-time of the Great Waves environment to time-space. And for those of you that may be new, I'll go over this concept again. Space-time is, we have three dimensions, space, one dimension, time, right? We have space surrounding us in three dimensions. And we have one dimension time, which is linear. That's the only direction time goes where we are sitting at right now. But then we have this area of the cosmos, the universe, that is time space. And that is three dimensions time, one dimension space, which means that space really doesn't go anywhere, but you have three dimensions of time around you. So flip-flop them. So the three dimensions of time, past, present, future. And this is like if you're reviewing a memory, it exists somewhere in time space, right? I mean, it may be from 30 years ago or 10 or, what have you. And you're in there, you're not moving, you're in one dimension space watching this event take place right now. If I ask you to think of something that happened in fifth grade, then you're watching the events happen in fifth grade from one dimension space, and that is you are viewing past, and you can do the present as well. You can and possibly view the possibilities or probabilities of a future time space. So, okay. All right. We find this observation most perceptive. The entire mood of the Great Way is indeed dependent on its notable difference from the significator. The significator is the significant self to a great extent, but not entirely influenced by lowering the veil. The Great Way of the mind, body, or the spirit draws the environment which has the new architecture caused by the veiling process and thusly dipped in the great limitless current of time space. Okay. So it depends on how well you did with your significator portion of your journey, right? And I find that these are constantly going back to time and time again. Because there's with each lesson, I feel like, with each growth period, there is one of these cycles. And sometimes I can pick them out and sometimes I can't. So, but I am getting better about it. I can see that. I'm not always great at recognizing the catalyst, which is probably true for a lot of us. Sometimes we just don't recognize that there's an opportunity of growth in front of us and we're fighting against it. So, and what is that opportunity? It's the opportunity to be the better person sometimes. So, and that's discernment with each experience. That's what it's all about, right? It's all about experience. When it comes down to it, it's experience. Okay. And the great way, so with this one here, I feel like I need to say something about this. And I know I have before. I did go over the chariot in detail in one whole episode a while back, but which is been the new architecture caused by the veiling process. So the great way. Yeah. Recognizing that you still have the veil, maybe lifting slightly, but there's an opportunity placed in front of you, I feel like. Or you're able to see limitless opportunities for where you're standing. And I think the opportunity there would be to go forth, Go forth and bring through the part of you that you find has connected to Creator. Okay, next question in the same session. I am guessing that the wheels on the chariot indicate the ability of the mind to be able to, now to move in time space. This is correct. So this is where we get to the point where they talk about the mind being able to move in time space, which it does all the time, guys. We just have to recognize when it's happening. And this has been my thing to pinpoint when it's happening. Because I once I realized one time that it was happening, it was like, well, that's nothing new. So I think part of it is for us to realize this is happening and we need to learn how to work with it. Okay, so We can't say that the observation is totally incorrect, for there is as much work in time space as the individual who evokes this complex of concepts has assimilated. However, it would be more appropriate to draw the attention to the fact that although the chariot is wheeled, it is not harnessed to that which draws it by a physical or visible harness. What then, O student, links and harnesses the chariot's power of movement to the chariot? Well, I think that would be consciousness, right? That would be the magician. That would be consciousness. Consciousness is, or the willpower, or all the above, you know, drawing the mind into which space or time space we would like to move into. Hope that makes sense. So yeah, let me show you on the card. Let's go back to it. I know I've been kind of flipping back and forth. So there's no harnesses, right? And in mine, though, in my deck, I think there's horses instead of sphinxes. And there are harnesses. So I feel like at one point in time, when and if I designed my own deck, I would remove the harnesses. Because, yeah, it's right. I mean, it's power of willpower, consciousness, and willpower involved in moving the mind where it needs to go. So. Okay. So at one point in time, they were redrawing these and they were getting direction from Ra to redraw these. So, because Ra had given some insight into the Egyptians a few millennia ago. And of course, some of it got distorted, which I don't think there's a way around distortions. However, they're trying to be a little bit more clear with it this time around. So we were thinking about replacing the sword in the right hand with a magical sphere and a downward scepter in the left hand, similar to card 5, the significator, as more appropriate for this card. Would you comment on that? And then Ross says, this is quite acceptable, especially if the sphere may be imaged as spherical and effulgent. So yeah, this is, they're talking about the sphere here, and there's a sword here. Okay. There's so much I can get into in this card. Let's go back to what they talk about, though. So, because this is like specific imagery here. Okay, next question. The bent left leg of the two sphinxes indicate a transformation that occurs on the left that doesn't on the right. Possibly an inability in that position to move. Does this have any merit? The observation is that has merit in that it may serve as the observe of the connotation intended. The position is intended to show two items, one of which is the dual possibilities of the time full characters they're drawn. Tongue twister. The resting is possible in time, as is the progress. If a mixture is attempted, the upright moving leg will be greatly hampered by the leg that is bent. The other meaning has to do with the same right angle with its architectural squareness as a device upon the breast of the actor. Time space is close in this concept, brought close due to the veiling process and its efficaciousness in producing actors who wish to use the resources of the mind in order to evolve. Okay, so let's look at the bent knee. So this one's bent. All right. So, yeah. You're saying, you know, the knee is bent, then it's a possibility that it will kind of be weighted down and kind of, you know, cause some lack of movement. Well, yeah, so that's the left side, right? There's some lack of movement on the left side by staying in negative patterns. Okay. All right, so I'm assuming, next question, same session, I am assuming that the skirt is skewed to the left for the same reason that it is in card number 4, indicating the distance service to self-polarized entities keep from others, and I am also assuming that the face is turned to the left, the same reason in card number 5. Because of the nature of the catalyst, is this correct? Raw answers, please expel breath. Okay, yeah, they were doing some exercises there. Your previous supposition is indeed roughly correct. We also might note that if we, informing the original images of your people, were using the cultural commonplaces of artistic expression of those in Egypt. The face is drawn to the side most often as the feet turned. We made use of this and thus wish to soften the significance of the sidelong look. In no case thus far in these deliberations, however, has any misinterpretation or unsuitable interpretation been drawn? Huh. So, no interpretation is wrong, I think is what they were trying to say. My own interpretation of it is, you know, she's listening, but she's looking this way. She's looking for some intuition to bring over. Possibly for some advice. Yeah. All right. I still think this is for protection. She's, you know, she knows she's going into possible negative situations, so she's bringing some protection while still listening from advice from the positive intuition. Okay. Okay, so that is the great way of the mind, and let's go through the great way of the body really quick, which there's not a whole lot on the body and the spirit as much as I wish. I so wish they would have asked more questions about them, but I know they were trying to get through all the archetypes when they were doing this channeling. And they couldn't do them anymore at some point. So, but that's okay. I think a lot of what Ra gave us anyway is kind of left open for interpretation. So, the great way of the body is the alchemist. Okay. And it's, I think I've done a whole episode on that as well. But the point of today, as I said, is to look at all three of them and how they interact with each other. Okay, and finally, the 14th, the great way of the body is called the alchemist because there is an infinity of time for the various bodies to operate within to learn the lessons necessary for evolution, as is correct. Ra says, well, this is less than completely correct, as the great way of the body must be seen as are all archetypes of the body to be a mirror image of the thrust of the activity of the mind. The body is a creature of the mind and is the instrument of manifestation for the fruits of the mind and spirit. Therefore, you may see the body is providing the Athanor through which the alchemist manifests gold. The Athanor is a furnace, right? And I want to say something too. And a lot of decks, this card is not called the Alchemist. In some it is. In some decks, it's called Temperance, which is having to do with the emotions. So I think there is an emotive quality to the Alchemist. And I've seen it. And maybe, again, that's just my own distortions and my own understanding. Fine. But it does help me understand the way that we manifest is through our emotions. And what do you think we manifest the best from? Love, right? Patience, you know, understanding, unconditional love. I feel like those are the things that we manifest best when we carry those emotions in our manifesting modes and our meditations and our visualizations. We manifest the best, the absolute best with love. Unconditional love and forgiveness. And we see the best results, not just for us, I'm not really in this for me anyway. I mean, I am, and to an extent, I mean, I have to think about me too, because if I don't help my own self, then I'm no help to anybody. However, I want to see everybody shine. So, okay. And there's no way that we manifest anything good from anger or resentment, or because that's if we carry those emotions, and that's what we see, right? So the body is if the body is the furnace and it's cooking, our outer environment, so to speak, if you want to look at it that way, then let's put our mind and our bodies into, let's bring through our spirit as a shuttle into our mind, into our bodies, love and forgiveness, right? So this archetype to me, that's how we make the energy manifest, right? And really for all the great ways, that's how we make the energy manifest. So we have an idea, we create it, we bring through that idea through our spirit as a shadow, then it enters our mind. And then we have this idea for creation of something, art, writing, music, technology, healing, something, you name it, okay? Then we bring it through our bodies, and then it enters the world, right? So then it enters the world, then it's offered to the world. So creation is an offer, your creation or our creation or whatever is then offered to the world. Bring it through. Okay. And I think it's the same thing we went over earlier with this. And this is where I get a little disappointed that I wish they would have gone more into this. But let's go into the great way of the spirit. Okay. Let's check our time. Okay. Very, very good. We're at 42 minutes. Get a drink. Okay, so archetype number 21, that is the 21st archetype. The world. So then I guess that the 21st archetype would represent the contact with intelligent infinity. Is that correct? Ra says, yeah, this is correct. Although one might see the reflection of this contact as well as the contact with intelligent energy, which is a universe, or you have called it somewhat provincially the world. So you're not thinking big enough, is what they're saying. So you are not thinking big enough. You called it the world, but it is the universe. So then, as session 80.22, then by this contact also with intelligent energy, can you give me an example of what this would be for both? For the contact with intelligent infinity and intelligent energy, can you give me an example of what this type of experience would result in, if that's at all possible? We have discussed the possibilities of contact with intelligent energy, for this is the energy of the logos, and thus it is the energy which heals, builds, removes, destroys, and transforms all other selves as well as the self. Okay, so the logos. We know our sun is a sub-logos of the logos, so it's a child of the logos. It very much is an adult. It's just a child logos. Remember, we are sub logos. And that is the energy that we are derived from. The contact with intelligent infinity is most likely to produce an unspeakable joy in the entity experiencing such contact. If you wish to query in more detail upon this subject, we invite you to do so in another working. Okay. And this is the same thing. So, going from the mind, body, and then the spirit, let me go into this where it says that the, see if I can't find it. Here we go. This is talking about healing abilities, but I wanted to show you where it talks about the spirit being a shuttle. Okay, here we go. This is 30.2. The mind is a complex which reflects the inpourings of the spirit and the outpourings of the body complex. So the mind is where you essentially are thinking from, I want to say, and there is parts in Lavan where it says our emotions are created from our mind. It contains what you know as feelings, emotions, and intellectual thoughts in its more conscious complexities. Moving further down the tree of mind, we see the intuition, which is of the nature of the mind, or in contact or in tune with total beingness complex. So this sphere is a bit, if I'm calling it, let's just say it is for this discussions, this episode's sake, this is representing the intuition. She's listening. This sphere is every part of this person here, as the person there itself. So, moving down to the roots of the mind, we find the progression of the consciousness, which gradually turns from the personal to the racial memory, to the cosmic influxes, and then thus becomes a direct contactor of that shuttle, which we call the spirit complex. The spirit complex is the channel whereby the inpourings from all the various universal, planetary, personal inpourings may be funneled into the roots of the consciousness, and whereby consciousness may be funneled to the gateway of intelligent infinity through the balanced, intelligent energy of body and mind. You will see by this series of definitive statements that the mind, body, and spirit are inexplicably intertwined and cannot continue one without the other. Thus, we refer to the mind-body-spirit complex rather than attempting to deal with them separately. For the work, shall we say, that you do during your experiences is done through the interaction of these three components, not through any one. Okay. All right. So let's look at, well, here we have the chariot and then we have the alchemist, right? And this figure here does have wings. So they are learning how to manifest. I feel like that. I feel like they're learning how to bring things through, to channel things through. And look, there's some type of object here on top of the head. And there's some stars up here in the corner. What do they represent? I would say our connection. We're looking further into the spirit, because remember, this is the great way of the body, then directly moves into the great way of the spirit, or just the archetypes of the spirit in general, I mean. However, look at all three of these together. Look at the progression. Look at the progression. So this is mind. This is body, this is spirit. And remember, the spirit is winged, I remember going through that before. Bring that the spirit is wings. This is the moment the spirit takes flight, but it takes the mind and body with it when it does take flight. And I'm going to go back to my statement earlier, and I'm going to explain it further about all things in the present moment. Okay, here we have the chariot, which talks about the mind's ability to move in time space. And then we have the alchemist bringing things through. And here we have the universe contact with intelligent infinity. Wouldn't that be our ability? Wouldn't our ability to move in time space and find that present moment allow us to bring through intelligent infinity, especially when we contacted it? So, going back to the exercises, again, we're listening for the present moment. Just be present. Practice being present throughout the day. Or set a timer, an alarm clock, practice with a metronome, watching a second hand on a clock, just searching for that present moment. And then do some visualizations on your manifesting. Choose mentally or outwardly, both to make that choice. I want to be in service to others. If you make the left hand path choice, that's on you. There's no wrong, there's no right. But I think the closer we get to understanding what the present moment carries for us, contact with intelligent infinity is in our ability to find that present moment. And then the alchemist can then bring through that intelligent infinity and basically with our emotions. This is why we should be allowing ourselves to feel those emotions and understanding where they're coming from and work with them as they come up. And going, I've said before, working with trying to control the emotions, I think has an adverse effect, more or less. Feel them, appreciate them, love them, and then move on from them and, fix whatever situation, if it needs fixing or not, so on and so forth. So, there's so much to be said about the figures here, and I think they do talk about this at some point somewhere. I don't know if I have time to get into it today. But I do notice she's playing music here. I mean, everything is a symphony, right? I think the universe, it rings, right? It rings, it makes music. And we have string theory. We have, which, may or may not be completely accurate from the way that humans can understand things. But in a sense, boiling down to the smallest units of creation, I think that everything vibrates. I think that frequency is the sound that things make when things vibrate. We vibrate at a certain frequency. Our chakras vibrate at a certain frequency. So I think it's in a sense representing the frequency that we bring to the world, and narrowing that down to precisely, seeing ourselves as our significant self, going through that transformation, being appreciative of that transformation, and then reaching the great way into understanding what who you are and what you're about and what you bring, and then doing it and then bring it. bring it, bring it. I'm making that choice too. Hey, I'm doing that. I'm doing this for in service to Creator. I'm doing this in service to others. Bring it on. So, let's check our time here. Okay. I think that should be good for now. I usually find like 28 other things as soon as I end the recording, and then I go back into to reading. And so if that happens and I make a part two, any suggestions from you guys as well, I'll be gladly to take them in. If there's anything that you would like to for me to go over, please let me know. Loveland has been one of my greatest interests in figuring out and understanding it the last couple of years. So I'll gladly look into anything for you all. In the meantime, stay safe. Stay safe. And especially those in Florida, and in any harm's way at all with whatever changes we have coming on. Please make arrangements and reach out. Don't be afraid to reach out if anybody needs any help. So I'll be praying and I'll be watching. I love you guys and I'll see you guys next time. Thank you.